You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Good day, Colorado, and thank you for joining us for the November 26th reading of The Environment. My name is John. Today, we've got two articles we're planning to share. Our first comes to us from the National Geographic magazine, and it's titled, The Unexpected Natural Wonders Near America's Busiest Airports. Long layover? Flight delay? These nine urban hiking trails, from a bamboo forest to a wildlife refuge, are all within 15 miles of major U.S. airport hubs. Written by Heidi Brandes. And then, time permitting, we'll get to our second article, which comes from the Nature Conservancy magazine and is titled Forever Wild. Part of the Adirondack Forest, including the historic Follansbee Pond, will open to the public for the first time in over 100 years. This was written by Ginger Strand. So back to our first article about holiday travel, rather apropos. This article, The Unexpected Natural Wonders Near America's Busiest Airports, opens up with a photograph of folks on a man-made wooden deck overlooking a river, beautiful river gorge, some tourists on there, and it's captioned, air travelers with an extended layover at Washington Dulles International Airport can go hiking at Great Falls Park in Virginia. And the article begins, flight delays at America's major airports, once a source of anxiety, now represent opportunities for unexpected adventures. Some travelers secretly hope for a delay that provides a chance to step beyond the terminal and discover the natural wonders, such as a hiking trek through bamboo forest near Atlanta or a journey through a wildlife refuge in Denver. In difficult moments, nature is scientifically proven to bring us peace, said Dan Lamb, chief executive for the Arbor Day Foundation. Research shows that access to trees and green space lowers our brain's levels of cortisol, which is our primary stress hormone, and improves cognitive function. When flight cancellations and hours-long delays threaten to derail a trip, these nine hiking trails, all within 15 miles of major U.S. airport hubs, offer a refreshing alternative to overcrowded food courts and uncomfortable gate seating. Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, ATL, in Atlanta, Georgia. Beyond the bamboo forest at East Palisades, Atlanta offers Cochrane Mill Park, just 20 minutes from the airport, with nearly 15 miles of hiking trails leading to the serene Henry Mill Falls. The park's diverse terrain accommodates hikers of all skill levels, with the Yellow Trail offering the most direct route to the waterfall. Travelers are often shocked to learn they can be standing under a waterfall within a half hour of leaving our terminals, said Adam Berrios, executive director of Visit Sandy Springs. And no one expects to find themselves in the midst of an exotic bamboo forest just 12 miles north of Atlanta. That's what makes the East Palisades Trail in Sandy Springs so special. How to get there? Take the MARTA Red Line from the airport to Sandy Springs Station for nearby trailheads or rideshare for $25 to $30. O'Hare International Airport, ORD, Chicago, Illinois. The Des Plaines River Trail and Greenway System offers more than 50 miles of trails, with a section conveniently located near O'Hare in Rosemont. From the cluster of airport hotels, you can access the trail behind the Hyatt Regency, stepping directly from the lobby to the forest path. The Schiller Woods section offers 2 to 3 miles of well-maintained trails, providing a perfect blend of accessibility and immersion. How to get there? Many airport hotels provide direct access, or take the Blue Line one stop to Rosemont and walk 10 minutes to reach the starting point of the Des Plaines River Trail. At this point in the article, we have a photograph of a long view with some park grass in the front and a sidewalk and a couple of trees. And then in the far distant background, you can see the skyline of what appears to be L.A., and it's captioned, travelers can hike the 2.6-mile Solstice Canyon Trail at Kenneth Hahn Recreational Area if they have an extended layover at LAX. And it continues, Los Angeles International Airport, LAX, Los Angeles, California. Kenneth Hahn State Recreation Area is situated less than 10 miles from LAX and features 5 miles of trails with panoramic views that extend from downtown LA to the Pacific Ocean. For those with more time, the 2.6-mile Solstice Canyon Trail in Malibu rewards hikers with a route so gentle you could walk it in flip-flops, shaded by sycamores and oaks. The trail leads to the foundations of a house designed by Paul R. Williams, the same architect who designed LAX's theme building. How to get there? A rideshare provides the fastest access from the airport and can cost from $30 to $50. LaGuardia Airport, LGA, New York. Pugsley Creek Park and Castle Hill Park offer trails where hikers can trace a maritime forest while enjoying views of the Whitestone and Throgs Neck bridges. The trail's unique selling point is the scenic overlooks where you can watch planes land at LaGuardia while surrounded by coastal vegetation. The 1.2-mile Pugsley Creek Rappinger Trail honors the Native American tribe, Wappinger, who originally inhabited this region. The trail winds through diverse hardwood forests. How to get there? The Q44-SBS bus from LaGuardia takes approximately 30 minutes. Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, SEA, Seattle, Washington. The Des Moines Creek Trail provides a 2.2-mile paved path starting just south of SeaTac Airport and continuing to Des Moines Beach Park on Puget Sound. The trail follows a salmon-bearing stream through a ravine forest, offering glimpses of air traffic taking off overhead. For a quicker escape, North SeaTac Park offers over 200 acres of green space with 2.5 miles of trails just 2 miles from the terminals, featuring paths that wind through a dense Pacific Northwest forest. How to get there? Air travelers can take a 5-minute rideshare for $10 to $15 or the Link Light Rail, one stop to Tukwila International Boulevard Station. Denver International Airport, DEN, Denver, Colorado. The Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge sits just 12 miles from Denver's terminals and offers more than 10 miles of trails through a restored prairie ecosystem. Once a chemical weapons manufacturing facility, this 15,000-acre refuge now protects bison herds, bald eagles, and prairie dogs. One of the best ways to experience the refuge is with a vehicle along the 11-mile wildlife drive, says Sarah Metzer, Visitor Services Manager. The accompanying podcast offers insight into the refuge's history as well as the nature and native wildlife that visitors may see. How to get there? A 20-minute rideshare costs approximately $25 to $30. At this point, there's a photograph of a lone bison, a little snow scattered through some tall grasses, and in the background, the cityscape of Denver, and behind that, the Rocky Mountains up against a brilliant blue sky. This is captioned, "If you have extra time in Denver, you may want to consider a hike in the Rocky Mountain Arsenal National Wildlife Refuge, where it's not uncommon to spot wildlife such as bald eagles, prairie dogs, and wild bison." Next, San Francisco International Airport, SFO, San Francisco, California. San Bruno Mountain State and County Park offers 2,416 acres of rugged landscape just 10 minutes from San Francisco International Airport. The 3.1-mile Summit Loop Trail rewards hikers with 360-degree views of San Francisco, the bay, and the airport below. The 0.4-mile accessible Bog Trail Loop explores San Bruno's mountains wetland saddle area, where travelers can choose between a leisurely path or a more rugged route through dense vegetation alive with California quail and songbirds. How to get there? Take the BART to the San Bruno station, then catch the Route 130 bus for a 10-minute ride to the park. Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport, PHX, Phoenix, Arizona. The South Mountain Park and Preserve, just 10 miles from Sky Harbor, encompasses more than 16,000 acres of pristine Sonoran Desert, making it one of the largest municipal parks in the United States. The Desert Classic Trail is an easy 2.4-mile loop and is dotted with iconic saguaro cacti, Palo Verde trees, and dramatic rock formations. The Mormon Trail ascends 1.3 miles to Hidden Valley, rewarding hikers with panoramic views of the Phoenix metropolitan area. How to get there? A 15-minute rideshare from Sky Harbor costs approximately $18 to $25. Or take the Valley Metro Rail to Central Washington and transfer to Bus Route 40. Washington Dulles International Airport, IAD, Dulles, Virginia. Great Falls Park, just 15 miles from Dulles, Virginia, offers dramatic scenery where the Potomac River plunges 76 feet over ancient rock formations. The river trail is an easy 1.3-mile walk to multiple overlooks of the Thundering Falls, while the challenging Billy Goat Trail Section A offers 1.7 miles of rock scrambling along the river's edge. The park connects to the historic C&O Canal towpath, adding layers of American history to your nature escape. How to get there? A 20-minute rideshare costs approximately $25 to $35. A note on the author, Heidi Brandes is an award-winning travel journalist and co-host of the travel podcast Untethered and Wander Wise, who specializes in adventure travel and off-the-beaten-path destinations. You can follow her on Instagram. Now we switch over to the magazine of the Nature Conservancy for an article titled Forever Wild. Part of the Adirondack Forest, including the historic Follansbee Pond, will open to the public for the first time in over 100 years. This was written by Ginger Strand. As I drive around the Adirondacks without a canoe or kayak and the roof of my car, I feel like a woman without a hat at the Kentucky Derby. Everyone here is only traveling overland between stretches of water. And why not? The lazy oxbows, reedy inlets, and braided channels of Adirondack rivers have been attracting paddlers since the Abenaki and Haudenosaunee people used them as transportation. And no river calls out more for a boat than the Racket River, which Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote of rowing up in his poem, The Adirondacks. Winding through grassy shallows in and out, two creeping miles of rushes, pads, and sponge, to Follansbee Water, and the Lake of Loons. I'm not surprised when, arriving at Follansbee Pond myself to meet a group of scientists, I have the only car without a roof rack. Ravens have built a huge nest under the eaves of a grand but aging lodge that sits near the water's edge. Bat droppings adorn the boathouse entrance, and pine needles have nearly buried an overturned rowboat. This place served as timberland for over 100 years and was privately owned by different families, and it still has a primeval feel. John, the former owner, told me three things. Tom Lakett's caretaker for 55 years tells me, I want the property logged, I want to make money, and I don't want to destroy the place. Well, I did all three. The property was selectively logged over the years, and the preserved forest helped supply local rivers and ponds with clean water. At this point in the article, there's a picture of a hand-drawn kind of parchment map that shows the landmass of the Adirondack Park, and it features Tupper Lake, Follansbee Pond, the Racket River, Saranac Lake, Lake Placid, etc., along with some symbols, a big canoe, a war drum, a burning torch, and a cabin, all pictured around it. And then there's an outtake that shows what national parks would fit in that landmass. And that includes Yellowstone, Grand Canyon, Glacier, and the Everglades. And the map is captioned, One-of-a-Kind Park. Adirondack Park covers one-fifth of New York State, larger than Yellowstone, Yosemite, and many other national parks combined. But, established in 1892, it differed from those national parks in that it experimented with combining existing towns, businesses, recreation, and wilderness. Today, the park reflects that vision. And there's a small photograph included at this point as well, and it's of some tall, tall trees with yellow, orange, and red leaves, and it's captioned Fall Color. Trees along the Racket River put on a show in the fall. And our article continues. The calm, cold waters of the storied Follansbee Pond hold a vaunted place in American art and literature, but the pond is also a part of a unique interlinked landscape of forest, streams, wetlands, and rare silver maple floodplains. In 2008, the Nature Conservancy bought this vast parcel of land from the estate of the former owner. In addition to Follansbee Pond, the 14,600-acre property includes 10 miles along the Racket River, a prime paddling waterway that makes up part of the longest inland water trail in the United States. Under private ownership, the left bank of that stretch of the Racket has been off-limits to paddlers and campers for over a century. It was widely expected that the Nature Conservancy would sell the land to the state of New York. Instead, to the surprise of everyone, including itself, the Nature Conservancy concluded that the property needed a special level of management and protection and kept it. In 2024, the Nature Conservancy sold two conservation easements to the state. The easements opened part of the parcel to recreational access and designated the rest of it as a freshwater research preserve with managed public access. "We were surprised as anyone," says Michelle Brown, a senior conservation scientist for the Nature Conservancy in New York. "But we followed the science. And sometimes the science leads to an unexpected place." At this point in the article, we have two photographs. One is of a lone individual in the middle of a tall grass of ferns, and the background is hardwood forest, a little bit of blue sky showing. And this one is captioned, "Getting to know Follansbee. The Conservancy has worked with researchers, the Center for Native Peoples and the Environment, and area groups like the Wild Center to better understand the property. Canyon Sundown, an intern for the Wild Center, maps plants for cultural significance." The second photograph features a single individual long-necked loon on a blue water surface. That's all that shows in the picture, and is captioned, "Soft Landing. A common loon, an icon of the Adirondacks, alights on Follansbee Pond." And we return to the article. The 6-million-acre Adirondack Park, covering one-fifth of New York State, is the largest park in the lower 48 states. But it differs from national parks like Yellowstone or Yosemite and state parks, which are typically set aside for recreation or wildlife. Managed by two state agencies, the park has no gates or entry fees, and it's peppered with small towns, farms, timberlands, businesses, and hunting camps, all nestled among forests, mountains, rivers, and lakes. All told, it is one of the largest tracts of protected wilderness east of the Mississippi, and if it had a heart, it would be right about at Follansbee Pond. Follansbee Pond is not really a pond, but rather a 102-foot deep lake, slightly larger than Central Park. For the local Haudenosaunee and Abenaki, it was a hunting area accessed via canoe routes that traversed the Racket River, the historic highway of the Adirondacks. Ralph Waldo Emerson followed that route on his own famous trip to the area in 1858 when he and a group of Transcendentalist artists and thinkers visited the pond on a month-long camping excursion later dubbed the Philosopher's Camp. A painting of the campers made their Follansbee Lakeshore campsite famous, and tourists sought it out until the 1890s when a timber company bought the land. In private hands, it became a family retreat as well as timberland. Now, over a century later, the question for the Nature Conservancy, what comes next? When the Follansbee property came up for sale, the Nature Conservancy's Adirondacks team was already in the midst of another large land deal. At the time, economic forces were driving paper companies to sell off their logging properties at bargain pricing, an enticing opportunity for land conservation. So, in 2007, the Nature Conservancy purchased 161,000 acres of former timberlands, structuring the deal so that some lands were ultimately sold to nearby communities for economic development, some were kept as sustainably forested timberlands, and the most unique and recreational valuable were sold to the state. Then, in 2008, the Nature Conservancy closed on the Follansbee property. Just about everyone expected the organization to sell it to New York State to become part of the Adirondack Forest Preserve. But with the economy entering recession, the state had no funds to buy another big parcel. Under no time pressure to transfer the land, the Nature Conservancy began studying it. "The delay turned out to be fortunate," says Peg Olson, the Nature Conservancy's Adirondacks director. "We put together a brain trust to brainstorm about the vision of the property's future. The science shaped our thinking." To start, the Nature Conservancy hosted a BioBlitz, bringing 50 scientists, geologists, soil scientists, ecologists, fish experts, onto the land to survey its flora and fauna. What the science showed was that this property was not just historically vaunted, it was ecologically significant. The lake, in particular, held a functioning ecosystem that is almost as intact as they come, says Michelle Brown. Brown is one of a literal boatload of the Nature Conservancy scientists who are showing me around Follansbee Pond. A loon dives into the dark water and bobs up. An osprey glides overhead. But one of the most notable creatures lurks unseen. This lake harbors a population of freshwater lake trout, and not just any lake trout. Old-growth lake trout, according to past research led by McGill University. Because of the minimal fishing at Follansbee, the trout have been able to grow older than similar trout might in other lakes. From the boat, Dirk Bryant, who directs land conservation for the Nature Conservancy in New York, is avidly watching ripple lines of white foam on the lake surface. An experienced angler, he tells me lake trout can be found underneath those bubbles. The trout's length here can reach 2 to 3 feet. The record one here weighed 31 pounds. That's a prized quarry for someone who has been obsessed with fishing since he was 4. Yet, Bryant loves the idea of keeping the pond and these fish protected. At this point, we've got a photograph, a beautiful aerial shot of the Adirondacks going deep into the background. And in the foreground is a lake being fed by a meandering river. Beautiful autumn colors, forests, not a structure or road to be seen. And this is captioned, "Historic Follansbee. The Racket River connects to Follansbee Pond." Our article continues, "The hardest thing for me as an angler was to learn to think differently," he says. "But we're thinking about our fisheries and climate change. The lake trout is our timber wolf, our apex predator. Now," he says, "many of the lakes that used to have the trout don't have them anymore." In fact, a 2024 study found that soon only 5% of the lakes in the Adirondacks will be capable of supporting native populations of trout, a tiny fraction driven down by climate change and development pressure. Follansbee Pond is one of a rare few cool enough and healthy enough to support lake trout. Its bathtub shape and 100-foot depth make it an increasingly important refuge for cold water-loving aquatic creatures. If you have some intact waters that can support native populations, those are the places that will support adaptation to climate change, as well as providing broodstock for restocking other waters, Brian says. You don't hunt wolves in Yellowstone. It became clear, Brown says, that any fishing could transform the lake. Still, when the Brain Trust floated the idea of protecting the pond as a freshwater preserve, it was a surprise to many. The expectation when the Nature Conservancy bought the Follansbee property was that it would become part of the Adirondack Forest Preserve, in which hunting, fishing, camping, and paddling are all allowed. Paddling guidebooks, in particular, had been anticipating that the Follansbee parcel would soon be accessible. The Adirondacks team looked for ways to balance protecting the lake with not turning the area into a conservation fortress. There are all these different needs. Public access, indigenous access, hunting clubs with leases, the fishery, the town, Olson says. We wanted to honor and respect all the stakeholders. They landed on a compromise. The conservation easements sold to New York State created 2 distinct areas on the Follansbee property. On nearly 6,000 acres along 10 miles of the Racket River, one easement creates new public access for hiking, paddling, camping, hunting, and fishing. The other easement protects a nearly 9,000-acre section around Follansbee Pond as a freshwater research preserve, guided by a public-private consortium to collaborate on research and preserve the lake's unique ecosystem. While making Follansbee a living laboratory, it also provides for indigenous access and managed public access aimed at education. Like the wider Adirondack Park with its combination of private lands, active towns, and protected wilderness areas, it, too, will be an ongoing experience in balancing environmental preservation with human communities. The Wild Center is a beautiful complex on land abutting the Follansbee parcel. I meet Carrie Zeman, program director for the center, at its cafe. No one quite knows yet how managed public access in the freshwater preserve will work. We're still figuring out what it looks like to keep a preserve, but to bring people in and offer understanding and appreciation, Zeman says. But she relishes the challenge. I see it being an intimate experience, she adds. Intimate experience is not a phrase typically associated with outdoor recreation. And yet, isn't that what everyone wants? Indigenous people reconnecting with their ancestors, paddlers carving a path through the current, an angler feeling a tug on her line. Everyone is seeking an intimate connection to the natural world. If the Follansbee Pond parcel can offer intimate connection while also being a refuge for climate-stressed species and a laboratory for furthering scientific understanding of freshwater ecosystems, that will be something very special, perhaps as special as this place itself. That does conclude our time today. Thank you so much for joining us for the November 26th reading of The Environment. My name is John.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.